Notice the title, Fact and Fiction, Asian Americans. Second time around, I did a workshop like this last week, and I've changed it just in case if anybody was here the first time around. We'll do it a little differently the second time around. And these are the things I hope to cover. I don't know if we'll get all through it. If at any point you have a question that you want to ask, throw your hand up and I'll see if I can answer it. If I can't answer it, that's okay. I'll see where I can find the answer for you. Okay, let me begin at the very top. You know, how many of you have met an Asian American other than myself? All right, everybody here has, okay. Okay, what kind of Asian Americans have you met?
You know? I have a Panamanian Chinese sister-in-law.
Okay, a Panamanian Chinese sister-in-law, all right, okay.
Mm-hmm. I work with a number of Filipinos.
Okay, Filipinos.
I work with a number of Vietnamese, but they are not born. I don't know what your definition of Asian American. They are. They have literally come here as refugees. From,
uh-huh. Okay. Others, yes.
Well, we live in Los Angeles, so Korean, Japanese, Chinese. Yeah, we just hired a new Vietnamese choir director at our church.
Okay.
What
else?
Filipino, Indian, Eastern,
mm-hmm.
From India.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
As a child, I had Japanese friends.
Okay, Japanese friends.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Other Asians.
Laotian.
Laotian.
Okay. Cambodian.
Cambodian. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's something we need to keep in mind when we talk about Asian Americans. And by Asian Americans, I'm talking about any Asian that's here in the United States. Okay, it is a unique experience that Asian Americans have, and it's also a very broad subject. It has a great deal of variety and a great deal of complexity. And let me just read off the official census list of what constitutes Asians. And Asians is basically anybody east of Pakistan. Mm. All right. And so we're talking about Chinese, Filipino, Japanese, Asian, Indian, Korean, Vietnamese, Laotian, Thai, Kampuchean or Cambodian, Pakistani, Indonesian, Hmong, Bangladeshis, Bhutanese, Borneans, Burmese, let's see, Surinams, Indochinese, Iwo Jimans, Javanese, Malayans, Moldavians, Nepalese, Okinawans, Sikkimese, Singaporeans, Sri Lankans, and Asian not specified. That's what we're okay. This is what we are dealing with in terms of the Asian American experience. All right, and so very often when someone gives me a telephone call and says, "We have a group of Asians who have moved into our neighborhood," the next question I ask is, "What kind of Asian?" Yeah, which ones are we dealing with here?
Someone in Burma says, "Oh, they all look alike to me."
Right, yeah, and we don't. Okay, of course I say that about white folks sometimes, but that's not true either. We all don't look alike. And after a while you can start figuring out the nuances, just like Norwegians seem to know what Swedes look like and Finns seem to know what Danes look like.
No doubt
about
especially
that.
How they act.
How they act, okay. I can walk into a room and start picking out, you know, and there are certain telltale clues when you start working at it, you know, if you get the name or the way they write or where they came from or how they speak when you hear the language or certain facial features, you will start noticing that. It is interesting to note, I remember during the Second World War, that there was a Life magazine article that showed a picture of Tojo on one side and on the other side a Chinese gentleman. It says, "Now this is how you can tell the difference during the Second World War." And I looked and I said, "Oh my God." You know, but that's what they tried to do back then. Right. So it's a very, very wide variety group, a very complex group. By complex, we're talking about immigrants, we're talking about refugees, we're talking about folks who have been here for a number of years, we're talking about all class levels, we're talking about people who come with money, with no money, every class you can think of, every economic level, every job level, from literates to illiterates, to even American-born and English-speaking Asian-Americans. So, you know, when we talk about Asian-Americans, it's a wide open subject. Let's move on to immigration. Okay. At the present time, half of 265,000 immigrants that enter the United States today, or every year annually, are Asians. Okay? And also, that does not include refugees. All right? In other words, if a refugee comes from Nicaragua, from El Salvador, for those who are able to come from El Salvador, or from Cambodia, Vietnam, Laos, those are mostly refugees. And for refugees, they did not come here of their own choice. All right? They had to leave where they did. For example, the Hmong, they were the folks who fought the secret war in Laos for the CIA. As soon as Vietnam took over Laos, the Hmong knew, and the Vietnamese knew, that the Hmong were not going to be alive very much longer in Laos, so they had to leave. And so it was not their choice to go to the refugee camps, it was not their choice even to get here, but they had to get here. And one of the sad commentary in terms of the Hmong is the fact that we were not prepared for them, and they were not prepared for living in the United States, and which sets up a whole complex type of thing. But immigrants are entering the United States at a high rate. As of the 1980 census, there were approximately 3,466,000 Asians residing here in the United States, which constituted approximately almost to only 2% of the U.S. population. We need to keep this in mind in 1980. By 1990, it is estimated there will be about 5.5 million Asians residing in the United States, which will only constitute only 4% of the U.S. population. In other words, the Asian population will double over the 10-year period, but will only constitute 4%. So if anybody talks to you about a yellow peril or Asians are coming here to take over American jobs, that is not the case. All right? The numbers do not dictate that. However, it is interesting to note that a predominant number of Asians do reside in California. All right? 36% of the Asian population resides in California. If you include Hawaii, Hawaii has 13% of the Asian population. New York has 9.4% of the Asian population. As a matter of fact, the states with the most Asians would be California, Hawaii, New York, Illinois, Texas, New Jersey, and the state of Washington. Yeah. So, in other words, along the Pacific coast, along the Gulf coast, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston of Texas, going into the Midwest, Illinois, and in the Northeast. Those are where our concentrations are of Asians that reside here in the United States. However, it is interesting to note that for the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, guess where the most ELCA Asian members are?
Minneapolis.
Yes, Minnesota. Minnesota.
That's where the most Lutherans are. So.
That's right, and that's where we've done a great deal of refugee work, okay, through LIRS, and Southeast Asian Indo-Chinese resettlement has occurred in Minnesota, in that Midwest part, and so therefore we have more Asian members there at the present time. However, most of our Asian ministries are concentrated in California. You know, if you were to pick a state that had the most, it would be in California. And when I look at my fellow Californian Asians, I said, you see, Minnesota, they got more. What are you going to do? So anyway, it's a challenge. So it makes for interesting commentary there. Yes.
Do you have a percent of the population in the state of Oregon that are Asian American?
No,
I don't. It would not be a large number, so it might not show up.
Mm-hmm. No, it would be less than three. Well, let's see. Less than 3% of the Asians would reside in Oregon. I just don't know how many are there. But it is growing. In other words, along the Pacific coast, the Asian population is growing. And so for those of you who reside on the any of the Pacific coast states, you know, Washington, Oregon, California, you just can't help but run into Asians.
And that's because of the trade, natural trade.
Right. And this, all, you know, cities like Seattle, Portland, Tacoma, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego are natural points of entry for Asians. You know, and especially San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Seattle. These are natural points of entry. The interesting question always that I ask is, the Asians enter certain points, but where do they go after that?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what I'm always trying to deal with when we talk about ministry, is where are they going next? where are the Asians moving to next? So if you happen to know of a group of Asians who have settled in your neighborhood, I would love to know. And you know, I'd be happy to work with you on that in terms of how do you administer in that type of situation. So immigration is a very important part in terms of that. And immigrants come to the United States either as refugees, not of their own choice, for economic purposes, for education, because of their children. Koreans, for example, the education system in Korea is a very closed system. It is very difficult for a person to go through college in Korea. So what do the parents do? They give up their top paying jobs, their middle management jobs, or if they were in the military, come here, and unfortunately because of language problems or because of their inability not to get into the American job market, they buy these mom and pop stores, but they come here to sacrifice so their children can get an education, go to a university, and promise for their future. That's a very common Korean model that you will see. And the Korean population is growing very quickly.
Would that apply also to Korean clergy?
Yes.
In the United Methodist Church, we have a number of Korean clergy immigrating.
Mm-hmm.
And besides the needs of the community, the children's consideration.
Yes, yes, very much so. As a matter of fact, it is interesting to note in regards to Korean clergy has a special status on the immigration. In other words, if a pastor knows that has a call here in the United States, that person can very easily immigrate here to the United States. It is interesting to note that many of the Korean clergy who come over here know that they do not have a call here, and many of them start their own churches from scratch without any ties to any denomination. Yeah. So it's a fascinating phenomenon, for those of you who are clergy or want to study a particular church, is to see these Korean pastors come over here, and all of a sudden, whoosh, they got a congregation. And they're very a very aggressive, assertive, hardworking group of pastors who come over here, the Koreans. Okay, because the other thing about immigrants is they come with a load of different kinds of problems and needs. English as a second language, acculturation and assimilation kinds of concerns. One of the other things is a breakdown of the family structure because, let's say, the children learn English faster than the parents, so therefore the children assume the role of relating to the rest of the American population, and the parents do not fulfill that kind of leadership role, and all of a sudden, and also the children are not as Asian as their parents would hope that they would be. Conflict. So family problems is a common kind of thing. And for refugees, you know, homesickness. There's a number of Hmong who would love to get back to Laos, because they just have not adapted here, they do not want to adapt here, and it's very difficult for them. And they did not want to come here in the first place. They want to get back to the highlands of Laos. So you got all sorts of things there. Okay, any questions about immigration? Moving on to the American born. Okay, I am an American born English speaking Asian. An interesting phenomenon that deals with American born Asians is the whole question of identity. Now I have a poem here titled, "What Are You?" written by Joanne Miyamoto, and who I guess would be a sansei, a third generation Japanese. She writes the following. "When I was young, kids used to ask me, 'What are you?' I tell them what my mom told me. 'I'm an American.' 'Chin chin Chinaman, you're a Jap.' Flashing hot inside, I'd go home. My mom would say, 'Don't worry, he who walks alone walks faster.' People kept asking me, 'What are you?' And I would always answer, 'I'm an American.' They'd say, 'No, what nationality?' 'I'm an American. That's where I was born,' flashing hot inside. And when I tell them what they wanted to know, Japanese, 'Oh, I've been to Japan.' I'd get it over with. Me, they could catalog and file me, pigeonhole me so they'd know just how to think of me. Priding themselves, they could guess the difference between Japanese and Chinese. They had me wishing I was American, just like them. They had me wishing I was what I'd been seeing in movies and on TV, on billboards, and in magazines. While they were making laws in California against us owning land, we were trying to be American. And laws against us intermarrying with white people, we were trying to be American. When they put us in concentration camps, we were trying to be American. Our people volunteered to fight against their own country, trying to be American. When they dropped the atom bomb, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we were still trying. Finally, we made it. Most of our parents fiercely dedicated to give us a good education, to give us everything they never had, we made it. Now they use us as an example to the blacks and browns, how we made it, how we overcame. But there was always someone asking me, what are you? Now I answer, I'm an Asian. And they say, why do you want to separate yourselves? Now I say, I'm Japanese. And they say, don't you know this is the greatest country in the world? Now I say in America, I'm part of the third world people. And they say, if you don't like it here, why don't you go back? The dilemma of being an American-born Asian in the United States is shared here by Joanne Miyamoto. Being both Asian, being American, being English-speaking, and maybe, and then at the same time, being Asian. Yeah. The American-born Asian. It is interesting to note that one of the theories in the church is the fact that an immigrant, once they have learned English and let's say has gotten acculturated to the American society, should be able to move in to your average American English-speaking congregation. A phenomenon that I have been seeing in California and in New York is these, and in Chicago, is the start and the continuation and the perpetuation of English-speaking Asian congregations. There are a number of English-speaking Asians who do not join our regular white American congregations. And that I find very disturbing, because the theory is that once we get them beyond immigration, they should be filtering into our existing congregations, and that is not happening. Now, that's not to say that there are Asians who are doing that. I'm sure in any of your congregations are probably Asians that are members, but there is a sizable number of American-born Asians that are not joining our congregations. Yes?
In our particular United Methodist Church, which you would say would be the typical Anglo church, there are a couple of Japanese Americans. Across the street from us, one goes to a Japanese, there are two different Japanese churches, one in downtown Los Angeles and mm-hmm. one on the west side. Mm-hmm. Two different families have chosen two different Japanese English United Methodist speaking congregations to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of mind-boggling, and one is not going to church right now because their building is being under construction, a new one in Little Tokyo, and the other one is further away. And I said, well, you have two choices. Why don't you come join us in the interim, or why don't you go to the one in West LA? No, I'm going to wait until this one gets mm-hmm. built. So I'm here kind of trying to sort out, you know, what's being said to me, or what, mm-hmm. or what's my response?
Sure, sure. There are several factors that come into play here. One, among Asians, I'm finding that Asians tend to be very loyal to whichever congregation they initially join. Okay, but there's that loyalty factor that comes into play. The other thing I'm finding in talking with certain English-speaking Asians, they feel more comfortable being with their own kind. Yeah, it's a fascinating phenomenon. You know, one could easily understand why an immigrant would want to be with their own kind. I mean, it's part of the Lutheran history, and also because of language and being a part of one's own culture. But there's something there that in talking with them that they really feel uncomfortable being in a predominantly white congregation. Not saying that every Asian is uncomfortable, but there's a sizable number of them that aren't.
Yeah, being at the heart of this, what is the Lutheran Church thinking about this? Is there a desire to integrate the people into the average congregation, or what?
Well, the desire of the ELCA, of course, is to move into the direction of, you know, there is an existing ministry there. That existing ministry should be ministering to all the folks in that community and in that neighborhood, and therefore somehow, understanding those people, should be able to incorporate those persons whether they be Asians, blacks, Hispanics, or Native Americans, into the existing ministry. So there's a sense that you're talking about a unified ministry. It's a question of how that's done at that point, whether it be a separate language ministry, or you have a separate, do something separate, or you do some kind of, you know, move, intentional move into, you know, some sense of coming together in terms of a unified ministry. And we have used a number of different models along those lines. The thing, though, that we're finding is that it's a very difficult process. It is not an easy process. As a matter of fact, I'm dealing with a situation where there is a Lutheran congregation that started the Chinese ministry with the whole idea that it would become a unified ministry. Unfortunately, what the congregation has decided, based upon economic reasons, is that they will not renew the call of the Chinese pastor, which in essence basically terminates the Chinese ministry in that location. Okay? So, and one of the reasons why the Chinese ministry did not grow there, it was that there was an inordinate amount of pressure by the present English-speaking folks to push the Chinese into the English-speaking service. Okay, and so there was no planning as to how to do that, and because of the pressure, a number of Chinese folks did not join that congregation. So, yeah.
How active are we as a church in mission activities in Oriental countries and Asian countries?
The Lutherans have not been the most active group in Asia. I mean, we were more active in Africa, for example. So we were latecomers into the Asian scene. The traditional Lutheran mission field was China, but then 1949, when the communists took over, changed all that for the Lutherans. We've been active in Japan, Korea to a very less extent, which is Missouri Synod, Southeast Asia, specifically in Malaysia and Singapore, we've been active, and in Indonesia. But really, we have not been super active. So when we talk about a Lutheran ministry here, we cannot talk in terms of Lutherans coming from Asia to here, unlike the immigration from Europe.
Are we supporting any independent Asian congregations or missions?
Yes. Here in the United States, a number of our Asian ministries are independent Asian ministries, but the bulk of our Asian ministries are geared towards immigrants. And the challenge that a number of my immigrant colleagues are seeing and I am seeing is, what do we do with the next generation? Because there is a shortage in all denominations for English-speaking American-born or children who were raised at a very young age to do English-speaking Asian ministries here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. A comment and a question. Mm-hmm. I spent some time over in Thailand, mm-hmm. and I noticed that the Mormon people were very active over
there. Yes.
And my question is, when I was over in Thailand and here, I noticed they really put a big emphasis on education. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, does that carry over to Asian-born American second generation?
The emphasis on education?
Yeah.
I'll get to that when we get to the next subject. Okay. The question of success. Okay. But yeah, it does carry over to a certain degree, and it doesn't. And we'll get more into that. Yes?
How much have Caucasians been integrated into predominantly Asian congregations?
There are some, I have been to some of the English-speaking Asian congregations, and there is an occasional white that's there, and it's because the person has decided that this is where they feel at home. But it is not a deliberate thing, though. It has to be the choice of the white person. It's not an intentional thing on the part of the Asian congregation to do that. And my guess in terms of why an Asian would not be comfortable is that they don't feel accepted, or it's not a friendly place when they come into the average white congregation for these particular English-speaking Asians. You know, you could chalk it up to racism, put bad hospitality. I'm sure all of us know that when you walk into a congregation, how friendly that is. You could just tell, you know, and all of us have had that experience.
Well, I've just been reflecting on this whole idea of the rainbow and wonder if the experience of American-born, English-speaking, Asian, you know, sort of wanting to be among themselves and with each other, sort of is the mirror image of other ethnic groups, white congregations sort of wanting to be with themselves. And I wonder what it takes to really get a mixture if the rainbow is not maybe a fallacy. If what will it take?
Sure,
maybe that's your success thing.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Or maybe we shouldn't even be aiming in that direction if that's not what people want. But then where is the contact and where can the understanding come? And
Now, my thinking is along the lines is we have to shoot for the rainbow. I mean, the reality happens to be is you just can't put in one location, as we did before in the early Lutheran history,
right.
You know, a Finnish congregation on one corner, the Norwegians on another,
yes.
The Germans and the Swedes. It's just not feasible in today's society and in today's United States because our neighborhoods are mixed. It's also economically not feasible. And when you start looking seriously at the gospel, it says you got to bring everyone together together, okay? Yeah, and so it talks about a different way of looking at ministry, I believe, in terms of, you know, in other words, a question that always has to be asked is the way that I'm doing things the way that is not the way everybody else does it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We have to be open to a variety of languages as a possibility. We have to be open to learning from other people as to what the standards are for ministry or what needs to be done in a community. A classic story would be the one, I had a friend who was called about it and he was informed that, well, there's a lot of Hmong moving into my neighborhood. He says, well, that's okay, that's a normal thing, okay. And then the guy calls him back several weeks later and says, they want to worship here. And he says, fine, let them. Okay, they want to get baptized and join the church, great. And then he finally calls back and says, what should I do? Because they really need some leadership. Okay, I'll come out and ask them who their leader is. That's the question. Ask them who their leader is. And I think the amazing thing we'll find is that when we start asking certain people, you know, who their leaders are, what they need in terms of their community, what kind of services, the church can learn from that and then start responding to that. And it is amazing how that kind of serving and working with people leads into a partnership, and then all of a sudden people saying, I want to be a part of you. It's a question of whether we want to be a partner with them. That's the other thing. You know, are we committed to that? Are we intentional about that? Do we want to change? And it's not an easy question to ask, especially when we're talking about a congregation of 200 folks and everybody's has a say in this process.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And not everybody wants to be hospitable to the stranger who sojourns into that door, even though we throw the doors open. Yeah, it's a challenge. But my personal opinion is the gospel calls us to that. I think Jesus calls us to be about that kind of ministry and for us to struggle in that direction. Because if we don't,
seems to me there's some work to be done then in each of those communities to raise that vision up. And you know, I could see if I were an Asian American, I might be more reluctant to be mixed because I would want to preserve my identity.
Sure,
So it's
it's a two-way thing.
It really is.
Yeah, and especially when you talk about immigrants. You know, the immigrant mentality is not one is, I'm not looking for white friends, all right? I think that's a reality that we have to deal with. I find with certain English-speaking Asians, they're not looking for white friends either because they got burned somewhere along the line. And I think the challenge that we face as a church, and that's the way Paul operated too, as I look back on the New Testament, is he went out to the folk. I think that's the reality we have to deal with. We just don't throw the doors and they come in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Our challenge as a church is we got to get out there with the people, which means is I got to get out there in the community. I have to get to know the community leaders. I got to get to know the community needs. I need to know what are they struggling with. And then at the same time, I need to stand with them. I need to be with them. I need to understand them. If I don't speak the language, find someone to translate. All right. But and get members of the congregation out there. And then when the word gets around, gee, these Lutherans, they're really interested in us. I come back to Ascension Lutheran Church in Milwaukee, all right? a Hmong ministry is there. The reason why the Hmong are there is because they came to Ascension. Ascension opened their doors and they started getting to know the Hmong. And they assisted them in terms of, you know, helping them find jobs, helping them with English as second language. They're, you know, providing a worship space. They're trying to help assist them in every way possible. Even going so far as right now, they're going to try to start a cottage industry too, so that the Hmong can start using some of their natural craft talent there. But that, you know, that's a way a church can get into a community and get to know folks. But it's a long process too. It's not an overnight kind of thing. So I always say to folks, as soon as you start seeing the Asians move in, don't wait until there's 10,000 of them around you. Get moving. Start now. Start as soon as they start showing up on your doorstep. Start asking questions. It may not be until 2 years down the road that you start doing something, but you're ready 2 years down the road. Yes?
There are certain religions that are predominant within certain of these groups.
Yes.
Is there any consideration to what they have grown up with in terms of how to deal with them?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the philosophies and their way of thinking about life and about commitment to a religious ideal or something like that?
Sure. No, the first thinking, most of the Asians we will, any of us will encounter who are immigrants or even who are American born are not Christian. Mm-hmm. Okay? If they are Buddhists, they are, if you take a look at how they practice Buddhism, it is an occasional kind of thing. I mean, it's kind of a free flow. I mean, I either do it or I don't. Most of the religions that we will deal with when you're talking about immigrants are basically folk religion, or if you're dealing with the Hmong, it's animus. All right? If you're dealing with Indians from India, now that's a real complex. Yeah, I'd have to get Fred Rajan to be here to talk about that, but there's all sorts of things out there. But I think something we need to also take seriously is the whole question of conversion, which we do not talk very much about as Lutherans. Yes. Okay, but the challenge of Asians immigrating from Asia has to say to us, what do we mean by conversion and trusting in the Spirit to do that kind of conversion work through us, you know? And so much of that is tied into, you know, relationships with these folks. You know? And you don't always have to couch everything in a cultural context. If you can, that enhances what you're doing. But sometimes just because you're my friend and I'm your friend, and we can get along, something special happens there. Somehow the Spirit can use that kind of action. And then all of a sudden the realization is, this person cares for me. Okay. Yes.
I have a personal experience like that. We were friendship married to a Taiwanese boy,
mm-hmm.
who was our friendship boy for 3 years, and he converted to Christianity,
mm-hmm.
But not in the Lutheran Church.
Yeah.
But it was in a Baptist type situation, mm-hmm. where there were other people who were Taiwanese,
mm-hmm.
and they were so devout,
mm-hmm.
and it was a wonderful thing to see.
Oh yes. Sure. Yeah, which also talks about extending an invitation. You know, you can be sensitive to culture, but every now and then you can say, hey, why don't you come to my church?
And he's here. You know,
yeah.
He came to our Lutheran church a number of times before and after.
Yes.
In Southern California, we have Fuller Seminary, which has a very prominent church growth model and a very mm-hmm. prominent Asian, approach to church growth amongst ethnic peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And the churches that have bought into it are the more conservative, evangelical in the American sense, not in the European sense,
mm-hmm.
And they're fairly conservative theologically.
Yes.
running counter to a more pluralistic approach of the mainline denominations,
mm-hmm.
appears to me to be more manipulative,
mm-hmm.
but they seem to be much more successful.
Yes.
The struggle that I have is looking in within the particular congregation I am, the community that I am. The community is moving from 90% white in 1960 to 50% white,
mm-hmm.
which the other 50% is Asian, Black, Hispanic. Do I attempt to take some of the leadership that's already there and form Bible study groups that reflect the individual ethnic groupings. I feel uncomfortable with that idea. Mm-hmm. I feel even uncomfortable approaching people in the church and saying, well, yeah, you come from an Indian background. We know that there's a group of Indian. Would you start a Bible study? You're Japanese, would you, you know, you're Filipino. I'm kind of really lost in a quandary here as to, because I don't want to take the fuller approach, and yet I see eminent success there.
Yeah, no, the fuller approach, it talks about homogeneous units, in other words, and there's some truth to what the Fuller folks are saying. They're saying that if you have homogeneous, in other words, going back to Lutheran roots, if the Swedes were together, they would grow faster. If the Norwegians were together, they would grow faster. If the Chinese are together, they would grow faster. Now, if we were to mix the three together, God help that congregation. Because the heterogeneous model says it doesn't grow that fast and it takes more work. And there's truth in that, in some of that. I don't want to buy in completely into that because I think it robs the church of I think, what it means to be the people of God, all of us together, okay, the oneness that we share. There. However, I would like to also kick in that there are certain realities that we have to struggle with. It's hard, for example, if we're talking about an immigrant who comes from, let me say, Vietnam, who speaks only Vietnamese, their English is very limited, and all of a sudden we want to thrust them into the existing congregation's worship service. That's not good pastoral care of that person, and it makes it real difficult to also for the members of the existing congregation or to do something bilingual when the existing congregation has troubles with that sometimes. So sometimes, you know, you're caught in a dilemma as to what would be the appropriate thing to do at that point. And one of the things I suggest to folks is ask the folks. Ask the Vietnamese person, for example, well, would you prefer having a Bible study where you're with other Vietnamese, or would you prefer being with other, well, with a mixed group of folks, and see what the Vietnamese folks say. Or in the case of a Hmong, ask them, and then pick up from their cue. You know, see what their particular concerns are. And then at the same time, be very intentional in trying to set up possible interactions. You know, and I find some of the greatest interactions are those where one-on-one or a group with another group where you're talking about English as a second language. You know, or where are the needs of that person that I, as a member of this congregation, or as the pastor, or as a member of the staff, can interact with this person to build those kinds of bridges. So all of a sudden, when the opportunity presents itself for a mixed Bible study or a mixed worship service, people will feel the barriers would have been chopped down a bit, and they say, well, let me give it a try. Understanding that Asians as a whole, especially immigrants, do not like to embarrass ourselves in front of other folks. I don't want to lose face. So if my English is poor, and I know you speak, I perceive you to speak English better than me, I'm not going to try because I'm going to embarrass myself. So what you're going to see is a group of Asians who sit in the corner at a worship service and not say much of anything. You're wondering, what did we do wrong here? Or why isn't this person interacting? And it's not because of you. It's because they have a perception of what is good, common courtesy. So that's something to be aware of in that aspect. So, you know, ask them, feel them out. And it's a slow process to move in that direction. You may have to start separate kinds of things first before you can start moving it together. As a matter of fact, a common model that I've been saying to certain folks is you might start separate, and then at some point, maybe several years down the line, all of a sudden you may have a bilingual service where you bring a group together, but you'll still have a separate English-speaking service and a separate, let's say, Chinese language service, just because there are immigrants coming in, and you're not going to be able to have every Chinese worship in a bilingual service or even in the English-speaking service. But it's a intentional thing that has to be worked on. And you're very right, education with the Asians, education with the whites, education with those who are in between. And it's a long process. And a lot of education with the white folks, too. I mean, the climate has to be right. That there's an appropriate climate there that you have to set up in order to make this kind of thing work.
Well, there has to be mutual respect of the problems of each group.
Mm-hmm.
And these people that have just come and are trying to assimilate themselves just sure. into the mechanics of living in our country have enough of a survival sure. problem without imposing anything from the church.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And which also talks about that we, as the church, and need to be advocates for those who do not understand how it works here. It is amazing how church councils can manipulate things and say, well, it's us and them. Okay, and we know who has the power when it comes between the church council and a group of Asians here who don't even have a representative on the church council or who don't speak English or who don't even understand how the ELCA operates. So you gotta watch out for those kinds of things, or else you as a pastor or a staff person or a person who really are concerned about these folks get your legs cut off from under you and you're wondering, what happened? Okay? And that happens. That happens out there. So again, it's a long drawn out committed process that we're dealing with here. Okay. Any other questions before I move on to the question of how successful are the Asian Americans? Okay. I broke a copyright law, and now it's on tape that I did that. But back in March of this year, Doonesbury ran a series, six strips during a 1 week. I don't know if you've seen it, but it talks about something that's very obvious. In the first strip, I'll read it. Here's the principal of the school addressing the class, and he says, you know, there's a lot of talk these days about how the coming generation lacks competitive fire, particularly in relation to their Asian counterparts. Well, try telling that to this high school and this class, and especially try telling it to the three students in this class who have just been named National Merit Scholars. Huang Yapang Kim, would you stand up, please? Do we have to? Huang, obey your teacher. Okay? Now, goes on further. The next strip, student talking to Asian female. Okay, white male student says, hey, good going on the National Merit Scholarship, Kim. Fairly awesome. And then Kim says, thanks, Sean. Must be easier to be a grind if you grow up in an Asian family, huh? And then Kim says, I don't know. Huh? Says Sean. Kim says, I'm adopted by Jewish parents. Jewish? Yo, say no more. I wasn't planning to. Alright. Okay, next strip. Female white talking to Kim. Okay, National Merit Scholar. How do you do it, Kim? Kim says, I don't know, I guess I just study. No way, I tried that once. You've got some edge. Edge? Like what, Jennifer? Some genetic edge. Getting good grades is a racial characteristic, isn't it? An Asian thing. You won't tell anyone, will you? Says Kim. I knew it. You guys are some sort of super race, aren't you? Kim says, we mean you no harm. We seek only computers for our young. Okay, same white female reading a paper to her class. And I agree with Mr. Gephardt's assertion that Asians are threatening our economic future. We can see it right here in our own school. Who are getting the best colleges in disproportionate numbers? Asian kids. It's not fair. Thank you. Teacher responds, that was certainly an unusual essay, Jennifer. Thank you, Mr. McGowan. Unfortunately, it's racist. Are you sure? My parents helped me. Commentary. Okay. Last strip here. Parents talking to Kim's parents who happen to be Jewish, the Rosenthals in this case, I think. Yeah, okay. How does your girl do so well, Rosenthal? It's not like she grew up in an Asian family. No, but we've been raising her like an Asian child. Aha, like how? By teaching her the value of discipline, hard work, and respect for elders. Oh, but doesn't that give her an unfair advantage? Yeah, this is America, Rosenthal. There was a magazine in Time Magazine about, I don't know if you saw it, sometime last year, Asian kids standing their success. Are we? are the Asian Americans the success story that we say that they are? And I'm here to tell you, no. Okay, it is, the model minority myth is a myth. Okay, we are not a model minority. We are not, the folks who have made it, all right? Sure, Asian household income is higher than any other income in the United States, if you were to take a look across that. However, take a look at how many members of that household work, all right? And also, if you take a look at Asian per capita income, it is still lower than the average white per capita income. Also, that the success story tends to blind us to the problems of Asian Americans. A number of our folks do not come here with skills. A number of our folks do not come here with enough English skills. A number of Asians, when they immigrate here, or even those who are born here, are underemployed. How many of our Asian American executives make it as a chief executive officer or on top level management in any of our Fortune 500 companies? Any Asian Americans ever serve on the cabinet of the United States? No. No Asian American has ever ran for the presidency. The only Asian Americans who have ever served in office in terms of Congress or Senate either come from Hawaii. Or from California, S.I. Hayakawa, God help us on that one. Okay? And then, and he's not a great representation of the typical Asian American. Oh, and when you talk about internment, you see the guy was in Canada at the time when the internment occurred here in the United States. But anyway, success, we are not. And unfortunately, but some of our folks have been fantastically successful, very fantastically successful in terms of doctors, medicine, researchers, engineering, but where else have Asian Americans been successful? That's another reality that we face. Our immigrant parents, and my story is the same. When my parents wanted me to be a dentist or a doctor or anything that's gonna earn money, okay? That's why I have a problem getting pastors. As a matter of fact, when I told my parents that I wanted to be a pastor, they threatened to disinherit me. It was that simple. I was going to be no longer a member of this family. And I had a hard decision that night. Was I going to be a pastor after all, or was I going to start my own business or whatever? Okay? But that's a reality. There's a lot of pressure on second and third generation children to move into the fields that are technical and that also have been bastions where other Asians have entered. True, Asians have been doing well in terms of scores in order to get to university. However, the University of California, Berkeley, tried to exclude Asians by upping certain scores that were needed. And they had to all of a sudden apologize to Asian Americans and change that policy. Okay, but other colleges are considering that. Yet,
Asian quota.
Yeah, there's a quota. And folks are saying that Asian Americans should be admitted under other kinds of circumstances. But that's a problem there. Success? No, by no means. Why do Asians excel? Parents push them. The parents push hard. Now, there are a number of Asian students who don't do well. And if you take a look, it's because they don't have parents here. Or there's no push there. I mean, Asians are notorious overachievers, and we pay a price for that, a big price. I mean, a lot of family problems. If you read further that article in Time Magazine, a number of these kids get their fair share of nervous breakdowns, or if you see what happens in Japan, I mean, a kid doesn't make the right college exam, what do? They commit seppuku, basically. Commit suicide at that point. I mean, that is the kind of competition we talk about that comes from parents and the culture to a certain extent. Education, yes, is highly regarded in the traditional Confucian culture of East Asia. Yes?
Have you followed the series of articles by James Fallows in Atlantic Magazine?
No, I haven't seen them.
He's done a series over the last, about a year, of Oriental, broad-based Oriental culture, including Philippines, Japan, Singapore, Taiwan, all the way through. It's fascinating, a lot of these things you brought up. Mm-hmm. Are there?
Yeah,
it's quite a bit of anti-Caucasian racism in Japan.
Oh yeah, sure. also anti-Korean sentiment in Japan.
Yeah, that's right.
And then in Korea and China, anti-Japanese sentiment.
Yeah.
Sure, sure. Which talks about another dynamic if you want to bring a bunch of Asians together for a meeting. Yeah, especially if they're immigrants or certain folks who lived through the Second World War. It makes for an interesting conversation when I get certain folks together. So you have to know this kind of stuff. Yes.
Okay, you say that there isn't a lot of success amongst the Asians. So then you're not using success and education as a synonymous word. Okay, so because education is primary and you see them leading in education, isn't that correct?
There are certain ones who are doing well and there are others who aren't. And what I'm trying to say is don't let the success of a certain group of Asians blind us that there aren't problems among the Asians.
Oh yeah, I recognize that, but I still see, I mean, you know, there's national programs that speak to the issue that Asian children seem to be academically more geared toward academics and therefore doing better. I look at the city of Portland that I live in, and they publish every year the 40 students graduating from each one of the high schools. Mm-hmm. And the majority are Asians. Mm-hmm. So I still have some, I can appreciate that success and education don't go hand in hand, but it seems that education is, that they seem to be successful in getting better educations than many of our Caucasian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's us white folk who aren't pushing our kids anymore.
Oh, absolutely. That's very
true. It's not their fault for being successful.
No.
Wouldn't you have to relate those numbers? And this is true in our area at Everett, Washington, too, where there are a number of Asians that are high achievers. But wouldn't you have to relate that to the percentages in the population, too? I mean, we don't know about the many Asians who fall maybe below the average, even, or among the average. Mm-hmm. But we certainly do recognize a lot of the Asians that are high achievers.
But when I hear Bill say that less than 3% of Asians migrate to Oregon, and yet the majority of what the 10 or 12 high schools in the area graduate their high, then there is not, that doesn't go along with the population.
Yeah, no, there are Asians who are successful in school. I mean, even when I was going to school, there were a number. However, the problem I saw that I was being faced was that because of my success and the success of certain peers, there was a group of Asians who were being neglected, okay, out there. There was a group of Asians who had their hairdo that looked like Elvis Presley at the time, you know, kind of comes up to a point and hair sprayed back, and all they wanted to do was work on their cars. And everybody was saying to them, why don't you shape up, you know? And yet it did not really deal with their concern that they really had other interests, and the education system and their parents were did not recognize that, and that's a major concern I have. Is that sure? Let's say we get good grades, but where does that get us in terms of college or in terms of what vocations and professions? In other words, success in education. Some people identify that with success throughout the society, and we have not achieved that kind of success in our society. If you take a look in terms of per capita income and underemployment and the fact that we just have not, as Asians, broken through into upper levels of management, even though we are that well educated, we have that many degrees, and we have the kinds of people who do, you know, who are very competent in what they do.
Are you going to talk about failures or the seemingly underside of some of them?
Sure,
you
know, sure.
We had
no.
an episode of kind of a quasi-Philippine mafia right in my hometown.
Sure, no, the failures would be along the lines of, especially when it comes to adolescents who immigrate here to the United States. Asian adolescents who immigrate here are in that middle ground. Unlike their parents who could maybe have certain skills and know that they're not going to pick up English that well, or unlike their youngest siblings who pick up English very quickly, these are the ones who are caught where all of a sudden They don't pick up the English fast enough, and yet the education system demands it of them, their parents demand it of them, but they can't work it, and then they fall out. And we have a dropout rate. And they do form gangs, or they get into crime, or they have youth problems. Adolescent problems are a common problem. You could go to Chinatown, Koreatown, or wherever. Now, the Asians aren't going to talk about it. Okay, the immigrants will not come out flat out and say to you that, oh yeah, we got a problem. All right, but it's there. Another kind of problem is the kind of parental pressure that's put on the children. I mean, you will, something that teachers need to be aware of is stressed out Asian children. it's there, but it's again hidden by that success. You know, oh, the kid is doing so well, they're acing the test, but what price are they paying in terms of that, you know, they're not getting out there playing, they're not learning arts, or they're not doing what they enjoy doing, or they're not making friends, or not able to do extracurricular activities, where we start talking about the opportunity to really assimilate, to acculturate to a certain degree, and to learn about, you know, what life is in their neighborhood. So we gotta walk. Yes.
I can understand why that is, why the parents are pressuring the kids like they are. Because we, as Americans going abroad, we perpetuate the whole problem, because they see us as successful. They see America as a land of opportunity. And if we can get there, we may not make it, but by God, our kids are going to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
It's too bad it's that way, but I sure can understand.
I can understand it, having grown up in a household that way. I can understand very well why the parents put that kind of pressure, and especially those who come here, because I want my kids to do better than I did. However, you know, there's a point there where I'm very concerned about that next generation in terms of what kind of, you know, their mental health. And something to keep in mind is that in Asian culture, there is no talk of mental health, folks. Okay, there's no word in Chinese for the word confidentiality. All right, in other words, do not expect the Asian to come in for counseling. Okay, as a matter of fact, Asian mental health services in the various cities in California and in Seattle, whenever they have to deal with Asian clientele, they spend a lot of time educating Asians as to that we provide services like this to help you to deal. So that's another problem we deal with, you know, in terms of trying to deal with the fact that a lot of times we don't even recognize we got a problem. And you got to recognize that before you can even deal with it. Yeah. Yes?
In terms of the pressure put on children, is there more pressure put on the boys in the family than on the girls generally? I see that somewhat in teaching with some of the children in particular.
It depends upon the family and whether it's a firstborn. I mean, I was a firstborn, and there was a lot of pressure for me to set the standard for the rest of the siblings, and they were to beat it. Fortunately, I set a decent standard, I suppose. Yeah, no, there is some pressure, but there's pressure on all of them, on all the children, to excel. It is interesting to note, too, in Japan, there's this fantastic 16-year-old violinist, Midori. I don't know if you've seen her. Now, a question was asked of her, what would she do in the future? She does not consider playing violin as being her future vocation. Keep that in mind, that kind of mindset that the Asian comes in with. Playing violin, arts, the humanities, where, you know, you would think that those who have that talent should be allowed to excel, is that's not in her mentality. Okay, so that's, your average Asian, a lot of education has to go along in terms of assisting Asians to understand that if you got a gifted person here, they should be allowed to excel in that direction. It may not be medicine, or it may not be engineering, it may not be certain technical skills, okay? But, you see, so and Midori was very flat out saying, well, I don't know if I'll be playing violin once I graduate from college. And there
There's
you have that kind of talent.
Too, that spends, you know, still has a totally intensive academic life also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas we might let a figure skater skate more than study, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that way for her.
No, it's not. And so in East Asia, China and Japan, Southeast Asia, that Confucian ethic when it comes to education is still highly prized. Education is considered a very important thing. And that does, it's there in the culture. It's a question of how it gets played out and what the price is paid in terms of children, and does education really lead to success here in the United States or in Asia? You know, in light of the fact that at the present time, you know, that's not always the case, even though some of our folks do excel.
Probably not a success in terms of power, but perhaps an accomplishment.
An accomplishment, but it certainly does not lead towards, at the present time, if we look at the present track record, you know, top level management, or top government positions, or whatever. Yeah, it just does not guarantee that. Okay, let me just say real quickly, there's a rise of anti-Asian violence. Just because Japan is doing well, there's been a rise in Asian bashing, Asian scapegoating. Vincent Chin, a Chinese, was mistaken for a Japanese in a bar in Detroit, and two auto workers clubbed him to death with a baseball bat. Okay, he was Chinese though, but no. All right, the cross burnings in Sacramento, in Texas, because of Vietnamese. The Vietnamese story is real interesting in Texas. The fishermen sold their worst boats to the Vietnamese immigrants or refugees who showed up on the Texas Gulf Coast. The Vietnamese fixed the boats up and out-competed the white Americans in fishing. And then they complained, but then, hey, the Vietnamese woke up earlier, they fished longer, and they beat them. And now, I think, what is it, 60% to 70% of the fishermen on the Gulf Coast of Texas are now Vietnamese. But, you know, the Ku Klux Klan went out there and wanted to burn crosses and all that, but then an Asian told him, you know, you're dealing with these refugees who were all soldiers from Vietnam. These people know how to, but anyway.